Colonel Collins, Reel 5. Now, you'd been just been to the two battle schools and School of Infantry, detached from 43rd Battalion, to whom you were only in turn attached. Did you stay with them long, or were you given your posted overseas?
Well, I was posted overseas. If you'd asked me this yesterday, I would have said in July 43, but I came across something this morning or last evening, which suggested that I went on the troop ship in June 43, in fact, but that's just a detail. But really, from February to June, I was nominally on the strength, well, for the time I was commissioned, I say March, April, May, so say 3 months then, 3 months and a bit. And during that time, I did this, as we all did, in the battle school training, and we did some route marches, and we did a tremendous lot of kit inspections and so on. And I must tell you something very amusing about that, and I had a very narrow escape, because I had brought all my kit when we left the Octu. I had all my kit, personal belongings, with me back here, because at home here,
Bodmin.
On the basis at Bodmin, yes, on the basis that you know, a good soldier is never separated from his kit. And then, being reasonably well organized in those days, before I went back to the battalion, I sent it on by luggage, British Rail, or not, it was Great Western Railway then, luggage in advance, you see. So, of course, I was in the peculiar position when we were preparing in the later stages to be sent on draft overseas. There was a great focus on kit inspections, and all the soldiers had to parade endlessly, you know, with their various items of kit, and we had to be check and double check, make sure that everybody had anything. And I was always standing there in borrowed kit, you see, feeling terribly embarrassed about it, and I was just hoping the CO wouldn't ask to see my kit, because I hadn't got a stitch. Mine was all sort of somewhere in the tender mercies of the railway company. Another thing one had to do as an officer there was to conduct drafts. That's a party of soldiers, you know, who are being sent overseas, to the port of embarkation. And I did at least one or two. Went up to Gourock once, I remember, and put a party of people, handed them over there. And then our turn was coming at any day, and I still hadn't got any kit. So I was going to be mightily embarrassed. But fortunately, by the grace of God, I can't think of anything else, my kit turned up in time for me to be properly equipped when our orders came. And I was given charge of a group of about 25 soldiers to go to North Africa to join, as was intended then, the 2nd Battalion DCLI, who were just, the campaign was coming to its culmination then in North Africa. And so off I went eventually. I think now it must have been in June 43 that I started out. It may have been beginning of July when we arrived there. But
and what was the trip out like?
Oh, very agreeable as far as I can remember. I mean, I played bridge most of the way. And, it was very exciting for me in a way. I mean, I'd never been on a liner or a ship of any size before. And in 43, sailing down through the Irish Sea, one was a bit apprehensive as to what was going to happen. And
what ship was it?
It was the SS Britannic, which had been converted into a troop ship at that time, and it was quite a luxury liner. And we sailed in that from Liverpool to Algiers in June 43, at least that was the departure time. So the Britannic was a very nice boat.
And you got to Algiers. What were your first impressions the first time?
It was hot. We'd been trying to get acclimatized a bit so far as one could on board ship. And the word was that we were going to have to march to our camp, which was at Bleeder, which was something like 15 miles inland. That was going to be, and having been on a troop ship for 3 weeks or something like that, and it was quite luxurious in a way. We were well fed there and coming through the Straits of Gibraltar and into the Mediterranean and so on and so forth. And then have to get out and be in khaki drill. Okay, we'd exposed our knees a little bit to some extent and then undertake this march. But still we got through it without undue difficulty, but it was pretty hot.
What happened when you got to Bleeder?
Well, I mean, I can't remember step by step, but obviously one was absorbed into the. That was an infantry. I think it was called an infantry. It was a holding unit of some sort. It may have been called an infantry reinforcement training unit, IRTU or IRTD or infantry reinforcement training depot, something like that. And one was getting acclimatized there, while there, one was sent on various little bits of training, and I went and did a mines course at there was some training center, I think it was, anyway, some way, it was a train journey. I think it was at Philippeville. And I may even have gone by sea to get there, either sea or train. We had some of these very long train journeys. And I had to do a course on mines, the laying and clearing of mines.
Is this new to you then?
Well, I think it must have been, yes. I think it must have been.
Do you remember what sort of thing they were teaching you in the course?
Well, they were teaching us the characteristics of anti-personnel mines and how to avoid them, more particularly the business of minefield clearance, where the infantry were used to go forward on hands and knees and prod the ground with a bayonet at an angle to try and detect solid objects in there where mines were known to have been laid. And the characteristics of them, it was only about a week's course or something like that, but probably the journey took a week each way to get there or something. So that was that. But anyway, the significance of that was when I got back to the holding depot, I found that my draft had already been sent on to the 2nd Battalion, Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. And I, to my extreme despair, really, found that I was being posted to the 16th Battalion, Durham Light Infantry. Well, admittedly, Durham is still just in England, and Cornwall's only just. But it couldn't have been more remote, and it didn't. They couldn't have done anything to me. It made me feel more alien at the time, more alienated. And so I went off with rather low spirits to join this battalion. But I have to say that I was, never been welcomed anywhere more than I was made welcome there. And I was meeting.
Where were they?
They were at Bleeder. BLIDA.
They were actually there.
That's the place that came to my mind. Yes, well, maybe the holding depot wasn't quite in Bleeder, so I can't recollect exactly. But the battalion was definitely at Bleeder.
And you say how did they make you welcome? What was so
good
about?
Oh, well, the CO, Johnny Preston, was so nice. I mean, he wasn't like any CO I'd met before. I mean, he was just human and friendly. And then I was posted to support company, and I met the company sergeant major, who was a dapper little cockney. I mean, although it was the Durham Light Infantry, there were people from all parts of the country there, of course. His name was Gates, George Gates, and if you've come across his name. And I introduced myself to him and asked his name. He said, Company Sergeant Major Gates, sir. Company Sergeant Major Gates, G, sir. G for George and G for Gates. And anyway, he was a splendid man. But everybody was on very, they'd been in action together. And that really is the telling thing. And
who was your company commander in a support company?
I think at that time, well, I do know, it was Major, the late lamented George Balance. Who was subsequently killed at the Cockeruto Spur battle.
Did he also make you very welcome?
Yes, as far as I can recollect, he was very nice. And I had I was the second in command. I was made the second in command of the the carrier platoon, and the second in command had responsibility for the Vickers machine gun section. Incidentally, while I've been talking, I've just been glancing at this history of the 16th Battalion DLI, and I see here, in fact, that early in June, the battalion moved to Bleeder, which is some 30 miles south of Algiers. Well, I know we didn't march the whole 30 miles, so I must have been at some intermediate stage earlier. So on to Bleeder. Yes, yeah, so they were very, very, very friendly, and the subalterns, reading from here, it says the period at Bleeder was enjoyed by everyone. One or two dances were organized by the officers, and the sergeants were able to get together for the first time since the battalion left England. And I put a little footnote in there to say, it says the reinforcements were received. That's right. The whole of the brigade was concentrated in this area, and welcome reinforcements were received. And I put a little marginal note to say that I was one of those who arrived and joined support company as the Vickers machine, in charge of the Vickers machine gun section.
Now, who was in command of the carrier platoon?
I've jumped a stage. There's the support company, I mention him as Major George Bannon. I think it must have been Harry Minehere at that time, a chap called Harry Minehere. If you've heard his name in your researches, he's now gone, I'm afraid.
Now, you were put in charge of the Vickers. You hadn't had much experience with Vickers, had you?
I'd had zero experience with the Vickers, and I was, as I think you saw from my photographs, I looked very young in those days. Well, I was very young, really. I was just barely 20, and rather, small of stature. And I was told subsequently, by the way, one of the sergeant majors said to the CEO, to his company commander, "Oh, sir, they're sending boys out to us now." But anyway, so when I was put in charge of the Vickers, of course, that's a heavy piece of equipment, and even when it's stripped down in its section into its elements, I mean, I forget the weights, but the tripod and the barrel assembly and those sort of, they weigh something like 60, 70, 80 pounds each. And we had to go out on exercise, and they had to be carried sometimes up into fire positions, up over the hills, or the jebels, as they were called in Arabic, in North Africa. And I remember, a bit of bravado, really, setting off, leading the way, carrying one of these bits, and there was a certain man smirking behind me, that I was going to crumble under this load. But in fact, I kept my end up very well, and I managed it. But I'd never learnt the technicalities, except from the NCOs there and then. But, I learned a bit about the fire control and that sort of thing, which was really my main role.
What was the composition of the section?
I can't remember.
Two guns, or...?
I can't remember. It'd be either two or four, I would think.
And what did you learn about fire control?
Well, I'll be guessing now. I'll be making it up because from my knowledge of what fire control entails. But, I mean, fire control entails the business of identifying targets, estimating the range to them, defining arcs of fire so that, you cover all the ground and all that sort of thing. And then giving, the commands to hold fire or the commands to start fire, whether at a steady rate or rapid, according to, to tactical circumstances.
So you were beginning to learn that.
Yes.
Anything else about this early, your first period with the battalion?
Well, no, I don't remember, except going out in the evening and going into Algiers with some of the officers, and that was a bit of an education in one way or another. I saw things there that I hadn't seen in England, or as you can imagine. But in the sort of local quarters, shall we say, of Algiers.
Did they keep an eye on you to make sure?
Well, I think so. Really, I was, I was the sort of youngster, and I remember that, and we were just wondering what was going to happen. I think there was obviously a build-up coming for. You see, Sicily was invaded, wasn't it, on the 10th of July? No, we weren't in that. But, that's just in the period I'm talking about.
Now, you hadn't wanted to go to the 16th. How long was it before you settled down to the idea that they were your battalion?
Well, very quickly, as I say. They made me so welcome.
So you weren't hankering after the Cornwalls?
Well, no, I mean, I didn't know anybody in the Cornwalls, and I couldn't have been made more at home than I was there, so... Mark, you were looking back now. I mean, I'm speaking now in 1993... I mean, I find now that the people here around in the Regimental Association in Bodmin and so on, and others who served with the 2nd Battalion DCI during the war, I find I'm a sort of on the fringe of them. But although I was commissioned in the same regiment, I never actually saw a shot fired in anger in the DCLR, you see. And so, you know, but then one can't control these things in life, and things is better.
So, after Bleeder, what was your next move?
Well, I think we were moved forward to the concentration area for the invasion of Italy.
Near Bizerta.
We moved forward to Bizerta, yes. And again, we went up, I think we went up by sea, I would think. Yes, I've got a little note here. Algiers to Bizerta, August 43, in the motor vessel Banfora, I've got written down here, Banfora, which was originally called something else, anyway. I can't see what it was originally called. And we went and concentrated at Bizerta. And, you know, there was obviously a lot going on, a tremendous concentration of troops there. And if you refer to the that regimental history again, there was a lot of air activity as well. Air raids were numerous, I'm reading now.
Do you remember of it, if you see what I mean?
Well, I remember the air raids, and I remember this particular thing I was going to read out here. It says, it was most unwise for anyone to stand about in the open because of the falling shrapnel, and we were under orders not to do that, you see. But grandstand views were had of some of the dogfights which took place, because obviously the enemy could see this build-up of troops and were attacking us. And the footnote I put here, a notable casualty from this cause was no less a person than the corps commander, Lieutenant General Sir Brian Horrocks, who had a bit of shrapnel fall on his head and it put him out of action. He wasn't able to conduct the battle.
Because it was to be the landing at Salerno, but yes. What preparations were you going through?
Well, the main thing was the loading and waterproofing of vehicles, as I recall. You know, we had these carriers.
And how did you go about that?
Well, there were certain things laid down by the quartermaster and by battalion headquarters and by the company headquarters as to what had to be taken and what was not allowed to be taken and that sort of thing. And so the drivers were very ingenious, some of them, about how much they managed to squeeze into their... I mean, I remember there was a 1,500-weight truck which had about 30 hundredweights of stores stacked into it. And you know, it was a question of getting on everything you possibly could, but only in such a way that the vehicle would still be mobile and could actually drive onto the landing craft and drive off again at the other end.
What about the waterproofing? How did they do that?
Well, you know, I can't remember that very clearly. I think that must have been done by the Remy beforehand, or by, you know, they must have been supplied with some sort of waterproofing. But I mean, one of the principal thing was, of course, that you take the exhaust, put a tube on the end of the exhaust, and carry it up to such a height that it can't be inundated.
And what about actual invasion training? Did you get any of that?
I don't remember doing that at that stage. I have to say I made a bit of a fool of myself just at this crucial moment. Of course, one of the biggest hazards in not only North Africa but also in southern Italy was malaria. And everybody had to take a certain quantity of mepocrine tablets. Now, The young officers had to sort of stand in the meal queue. They were given out at meal times, and one stood in the meal queue and made sure that every soldier had his mepocrine tablet and took it, you see. So they were supervised and they didn't slip up. But through all that, the time I got into the officer's tent to have my own meal, you know, I occasionally slipped up and didn't take mine. So shortly before the invasion, unfortunately, I went down with a mild attack of malaria, which, you know, I didn't get many brownie points for that. And I remember George Balance, you know, giving me a pretty round, severe ticking off for that. And very well deserved too, really, because, you know, that's the sort of thing officers shouldn't do. But, you know, it was only a very mild attack. I've never had a recurrence, and it didn't keep me out of action for very long. But it did mean I missed the first phase of the battalion landing. We came in on the second
phase. You were actually hospitalised then?
I think I must have been in the low, or at least casualty, you know, casualty clearing station sort of thing, or whatever it would have been.
So what was it, when did you join?
I'm going to find it great difficulty to say the precise date, but yes, I can't remember the precise date that I followed up, but it was in the next wave, and I think we were still, I was already at sea when the news of the Italian surrender came, so we couldn't have been very far behind, the first echelon, as it were. And it was still in September. I have a note that it was, I've got the name of the, well, it was a landing ship tank that I was on, and in September 43. That's right.
But, and you landed at Salerno?
I landed at Salerno, yes. And on the beaches, and then went up to the battalion. And
where were they at that time?
Well, they were up on what was known as Hospital Hill. They were just above the corner of the hospital at Salerno, which is a notorious place, in the story of that battle, I don't know what happened to the machine gun section. I think because we were in the position we were in, I'm not sure how the machine guns were deployed. But anyway, I was sent immediately to a rifle company, because there'd already been casualties. And I was sent to take over a platoon in A Company.
Do you know which number platoon?
Well, I think it was number 9, but I've been a little bit... there were 6... Platoons 1 to 6, as I recall, were a headquarter company. And then the platoons in A Company were 7, 8 and 9. And I, at various times of my career in A... If you can call it that, in A Company... I commanded, I switched from one platoon to another. But I think it was 9, and that was rather unfortunate as later events will show.
So that was, you were in command of 9, and who was the A Company commander at that time?
Well, Captain Pritchard, who later became the adjutant, must have been, for a reason. I can recollect him particularly clearly. Why he was commanding the company as a captain, I'm not quite sure.
Now, what positions were A Company in, or 9 platoon?
Well,
roughly.
We were within, a couple of hundred yards above and to the left, as you look sort of inland, of the hospital wall, the corner of the hospital wall, which loomed large in my future experience. And we were able to look down on this from about 150, 200 yards. And as far as I remember, Frank Duffy's company were above us and to the left. And I think he may have been D Company at that time. And, I just got to recognize the things that stand out in my mind is being there and feeling very lost, really. And not being quite sure what was going on, being warned about the fruit in the lemon groves and orange groves being booby-trapped. And so there was all this luscious fruit around, and one couldn't with safety pick it, use it. And I wasn't there very long. I don't recollect being there any very long before I was sent on a pretty disastrous expedition.
Well, tell me about that. Well, what were you briefed?
Well, I better tell you about that. I was briefed that by the CO. I think I was required to go to battalion headquarters, and I was briefed that the enemy were believed to be withdrawing. Yes, the enemy were definitely withdrawing from around Salerno, and they had withdrawn to a range of hills further behind, and it was just a question of me taking my platoon and going forward to find out, how far they'd gone and where they were, whether they were the ground in front of us was clear and so on.
So it was a reconnaissance job?
Well, a fighting patrol. I was to take my whole platoon. And I think I said to you when we were talking earlier about battle training, we'd had these simulated situations innumerable times on training, and I was able to cope with them, you know, with distinction, although I say it myself. But here I felt totally confused, totally unequal to the situation, as I recall. And the CO was going on about that we'd be giving covering fire from the ships in the bay, from the Royal Naval ships in the bay, and American ships and so on and so forth, and there were American troops, you know, nearby, and so on and so forth, and all would be well, and off I was to go. And, of course, in those days, the radio communications were not very good. I just had a small portable, I think it was it called an 88 set or something like that, which my orderly carried. And but, I mean, the threaded thing was totally unreliable, and it didn't have a range very often of more than 100 yards sort of thing. And so off I went in the general direction, leaving the hospital to my right-hand side. I mean, I can see this is engraved in my mind now, leaving the hospital to the right-hand side. And I hadn't gone, well, I don't suppose more than 100 yards, at the very most 200 yards, before we were fired on from a position beside the hospital, which is about 150 yards down on the right. There was a light mortar detachment there, and people were firing 2-inch mortars or 51mm mortars in our direction. And although there was some certain amount of cover from view, in other words, it was a leafy, lightly wooded area, but we were on a slope, as I explained, leading down towards the hospital, and machine guns were being fired at us. And I can see now, I was on this bank, completely exposed to fire, although a little bit concealed from view, and I could see the bullets hitting the bank, you know, either side of me. And I thought, well, you know, this isn't on. I can't go on this basis. So I tried to call up the company commander on the radio for fresh orders, because it seemed to me that the situation was entirely different from what. And I was weighing up in my mind, what do I do about these people? Do I ignore them and go on? I mean, I hadn't really positively identified them, and that I decided really that they were too close on my line of attack and that I couldn't go on without. So I sent an orderly to run back to the battalion, to the company headquarters, with a written message to say what the situation was and to say what I was proposing to do, namely to try and sort out this irritation on the right flank, you know, and then continue the advance. And about 10 minutes later, the orderly came back a gibbering wreck, telling me that he'd run into some Germans between where we were and the company headquarters, which, as I say, wasn't more than, a very few hundred yards back. So, I mean, that seemed pretty dreadful. So I formed the conclusion then that, I mean, far from the enemy having withdrawn, they were you know, they were very much on the doorstep. So I determined to make some sort of attack on this post that was firing on us, and sort of going around the right flank, which took me to the right, back towards the hospital wall, below our position, you see. Well, of course, as we approached the hospital wall, all hell was let loose, and our own battalion mortar platoon brought down their defensive fire, you know, slap on top of my platoon. And I think we were about 29 people when we went out, and only 5 survived it. So that was rather nasty baptism of fire. And
That was my first time into action,
that's right, yes.
Did you feel you'd made a mistake?
Well, I must have done, I feel. But then, if I had the time over again, I don't really see what else I could have done. I think, when I'm more experienced, I might have played it differently. I'm not quite sure how, because, you know, it was the lack of communication, and to have gone on with, as I understood it, enemy troops, you know, around and behind me, would have been even more foolhardy. I mean, we could have just walked straight into the bag. So, I mean, there was no point in doing that. So, and I couldn't get a message back to the company commander. But anyway, so it was pretty disastrous. And
how did you get out of it? I
mean, well, they followed up the concentration with an assault with bullets and bayonets. Our own company, yes, and that's where I remember Captain Pritchard, because he was commanding it, you see, and
it's at that point you were able to stop them.
Well, I was talking to you yesterday about shouting. I mean, I was screaming mad with them, really. I'd been slightly hit myself in the hand,
tiny bit
of shrapnel, yes, and it was only a little bit of shrapnel through the knuckle. But and I just went and stood up in front of this onslaught of bullets and bayonets and the chap charging down and, you know,
waved
your arms. Exercise, say, you bloody idiots, you know, and can't you see it's us, sort of thing. And of course, then everybody was very crestfallen, and then we tried to see to the wounded and pick up the pieces of those who'd been blown to bits. You know, it was that bad. And